sense this thing came flying down, people.
Ladies and gentlemen, the microphones are on and the cameras are rolling. Good evening and welcome to City Hall for tonight's regularly scheduled City Council meeting. This meeting is called to order. I kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Don Cummings.
Here.
Duff Dantino.
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan. Sam Hill.
Here.
Dean Kilberg.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
We begin our city council meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would kindly ask that none other than Andre Salas to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Salas. Folks, we have a very special presentation this evening, arranged by our friend and colleague, Alderman Dean Kilberg. Mr. Kilberg, would you like to say anything prior to the...
No, I've had the opportunity the last few years to serve on a citizens advisory committee at Fermi as it relates primarily to just neighborhood issues and topics that they would like to run by some of the members of the public that surround Fermi, and I found it to be a really interesting experience to learn more about the lab and some of the changes that the lab is going through that most of us are aware of. And a part of that outreach is to become more visible in the communities that surround the lab, and I extended the invitation recently, and they accepted to visit with us a little bit about the lab, and we're glad that you're here this evening and look forward to some of the things that you have to share.
Wonderful. Andre, are you going to say hello, or is it Mr. Henderson?
No, I think Stuart.
You'll have Stuart, okay. Well, we are indeed delighted to have you here, and as Alderman Kilberg indicated, we are all aware of Fermilab, but sometimes we take what we know for granted, and obviously there's a lot going on there. Of course, we have the benefit of the wise counsel of none other than Dr. Brown, who we know splits atoms every day. So, Mr. Henderson, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here and honor to be with you tonight, and thanks very much for the opportunity and the invitation to tell you about what's next for Fermilab. Let me start out by describing Fermilab. What is it? It's America's premier national laboratory for particle physics research. This is the type of research that tries to answer the questions of what is the subatomic world made of, and at the other end of the scale, what is the universe made of, and what are the interactions between those two scales. It's funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. The Department of Energy operates 10 scientific laboratories, so Fermilab is one of those scientific laboratories about 5 miles southeast of the city of Geneva, so your very near neighbor. Our mission is to build and operate particle accelerators and detectors. So we study the subatomic world, and we try to study the world and universe at the largest scales by building special machines to try and answer the questions that we ask. And usually those require our building particle accelerators and building detectors to look for special signatures of subatomic phenomena. These facilities are used by scientists from around the world to advance humankind's understanding of the universe at the very large and at the very small, as I said. And it's important to appreciate that we operate Fermilab as a user facility for users throughout the world. And these are users from universities in the United States, as well as many universities and labs throughout the world. We have participants at Fermilab from dozens of countries, and it's quite an international flavor at the laboratory because this is really international physics that we're pursuing. Some statistics about the lab. It's a beautiful site. It's a site of 6,800 acres. We employ about 1,700 staff members, 90% of whom live in the Fox Valley or Western DuPage. We have about 2,000 visiting scientists come. So we have more visiting scientists come to the lab than we have actual employees in the lab. And you'll see that makes a big impact on big economic impact in the area from all those visiting scientists. We have about 18,000 students who visit every year. It's not uncommon to arrive in the morning and see several busloads of students emptying out, starting to take a tour of Fermilab. It's quite a large program, and it makes a big impact in the area. The annual budget of the laboratory last year was $395 million. This year, it's about $20 million less. It's about $375 million. There was a study performed by University of Chicago on the economic impact of Fermilab, and they came up with a number of about $640 million as the economic impact based on that $395 million budget. And you see it's larger even than the budget, and that's due to the tremendous number of people who come to the laboratory to do their work. So this is a view of the Fermilab site. The largest feature you recognize on the site is the Tevatron. That was the world's highest energy particle accelerator until 2009. So through its existence, it was built in the early 1980s. It was the highest energy particle accelerator. It accelerated beams of protons, which are matter, and antiprotons, which are antimatter, to very high energies and smashed them together to see what came out. And a number of discoveries have been made at Fermilab. We've discovered two of the six types of particles that make up protons and neutrons, those particles called quarks, and have measured very precisely a large collection of parameters of known particles. Well, with the turn on of the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, CERN is the large European scientific laboratory that's a consortium of European countries, they constructed a collider at even higher energy than Fermilab's Tevatron, and they took over the mantle at the energy frontier of particle physics in 2009. So we just turned off the Tevatron about 1 year ago. So it was October of 2011 when the Tevatron ceased operation, and we often get the question when we go out and talk to groups in the public, well, is the lab still operating? Well, the answer is yes, of course the lab is still operating. We are operating all the other accelerators at Fermilab. Of the six accelerators at the laboratory, we turned off the largest one, but in the end it was one of six accelerators. So we're still operating the other five and pursuing a wide range of topics in elementary particle physics. Because Europe now has taken the lead in high-energy accelerators, we're in a position where we can take the lead in a different type of particle physics, a type of subatomic physics that relies on very intense beams of particles. So not necessarily at the highest energy, but the most intense. And the currency for that type of physics is the beam power that the particle accelerator can deliver. So this smaller circle toward the left is an accelerator called the main injector. That's one of the world's highest power particle accelerators, and we're busy right now in the middle of a one-year-long shutdown to double the beam power and make that machine the world's highest power, high-energy particle accelerator. So that's the sort of infrastructure that Fermilab brings to the scientific community that attracts scientists from all over the world. So it's a slightly different field of particle physics. It's still particle physics, but it's the type of physics that requires very intense beams. So let me run through some of the projects that are on our plate right now. This is a collection of projects that we refer to as the Muon Campus. It's about a $300 million investment at Fermilab that is located near the main campus, near Wilson Hall, you see in the background, and it contains two separate experiments which have separately been approved by the Department of Energy and at the moment are both proceeding. And these experiments are aimed at trying to measure properties of a particular subatomic particle called the muon, which is a heavy cousin of an electron. Everyone knows about electrons. A muon is like an electron, only it's quite a bit heavier, and it has a lifetime of a few millionths of a second. And by measuring very precise quantities of muons, it's possible to perform experiments that cannot be performed for instance, at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN. So that's about a $300 million investment that is just starting to ramp up now. There is another project that's been rolling for several years now called NOVA, the Neutrino Off-Axis Appearance Experiment, that has involved some modifications to the accelerator at Fermilab, but the construction of a very, very large detector in a very, very large building in Minnesota, very near the Minnesota-Canada border. So what you're seeing is a picture of some recent construction in which these very large detector blocks have been built at the facility there. They are stood up, and you can see the enormity of those detector blocks relative to the staff of people who have constructed them. So this will be one of the world's largest neutrino detectors, absolutely enormous detector, that helps strengthen our standing in this one particular area of particle physics that measures the properties of elusive particles called neutrinos. We generate these neutrinos at Fermilab, and they actually travel through the Earth, through the rock in the Earth, and where they emerge in Minnesota, because we generate them at a small angle here at Fermilab, they emerge and leave the Earth at Minnesota, and we've located a detector right at that spot. There's a smaller experiment, about a $20 million investment, to look at a different type of neutrino physics. It's an experiment called MicroBoon, and you can see this is involving construction right on Fermilab campus. It will come online in 2004 at completion of 2014 at completion of that detector. NOVA, I should have mentioned, will come online in April of 2013 as we begin to bring the accelerator back on. There's quite a large experimental project that is just now going through the early phases of approval within the Department of Energy. There's a rather arcane system for approving these large construction projects, and we're at a stage which is now called Critical Decision 1. It means the Department of Energy has agreed that this is science worth doing and that it should be performed at a Department of Energy lab, specifically Fermilab. Now with Critical Decision 1, the department is saying, yes, we want to do it. We understand its costs well enough. We understand its schedule well enough that we can allow you to complete a full design. So with approval of the so-called Critical Decision 1, we will then move into the design phase for this large project called the Long Baseline Neutrino Experiment. And in this experiment, instead of shooting a beam of neutrinos from Chicago up to Minnesota near the Canadian border, you can see the line. We will fire a beam of neutrinos generated at Fermilab over to an old gold mine, believe it or not, in South Dakota, located in Lead, South Dakota, the Homestake Mine, a very famous gold mine, in which we intend ultimately to build a neutrino detector down in the mine. This project is being organized in two phases, the early phase of which will involve building a building with a detector on the surface at the Homestake Mine and directing a beam line from Fermilab toward that location. Future phases of this project will include moving the detector further underground and making some other modifications. This first stage of this project is about a $900 million investment. So it's, by Department of Energy standards, that is quite a large construction project. So Fermilab is in a fortunate position that so far we are successful in bringing this project through the Department of Energy approval system. Just last month, we sent a very large digital camera, something called the Dark Energy Camera. It's a digital camera with 570 megapixels. If you go to Best Buy to buy a digital camera, you get one nowadays of about 16 megapixels. This has 570 megapixels, one of the largest ones that's been built. You can see in the middle picture on the right, it has been mounted in a telescope in Chile, the 4-meter Blanco telescope. And the point of this camera and the point of this experiment is try to understand the expansion of the universe. So by measuring supernova and galaxies way out on the edge of the universe, edge of the visible universe, it's possible to do certain measurements and measure with some precision how the universe is expanding. And that's one of the great mysteries of the universe is why is the universe actually expanding? It seems to be accelerating its expansion rather than slowing down its expansion. And that's quite a conundrum that physicists are dealing with. And we think that this mysterious substance known as dark energy, we call it dark because we don't know anything about it and we can't see it directly, may explain that. And if it does, it would account for 3/4 of the matter in the universe, 3/4 of the energy in the universe. So you can see the work going on at Fermilab is really directed at trying to understand at a very fundamental levels the inner workings of matter as well as the universe at its largest scales. There's an important initiative that we are ramping up at Fermilab to transfer technology, the sort of technology that we have to develop to build the camera that I just showed, to build the big accelerators of the future, to build the big detectors of the future. There's a lot of very sophisticated technology involved, and we are trying to be deliberate about forging relationships to get that technology transferred to industry and get it into the marketplace. And that is the point of the Illinois Accelerator Research Center. We hope that IARC, as we call it, will serve as a conduit for technology developed at Fermilab and even at other national labs and deploy that technology primarily with industries that rely on particle accelerators. And you may wonder, well, what on earth are those? Aren't particle accelerators just the gigantic things that we run at Fermilab? Well, particle accelerators are used to treat cancer. They're used to make isotopes in medical isotopes in hospitals if you have a diagnostic treatment. They're even used to manufacture the plastic shrink wrap that goes around your Thanksgiving turkey. So accelerators are used in all sorts of industries, and we work on technology at the lab to try to make them cheaper and more compact. Looking out a decade, this is how we would like the Fermilab accelerator, the Fermilab site and accelerator complex to look in 2020. There are two main features I want to show. Heading off to the left is that beam line headed towards South Dakota that I mentioned for the long baseline neutrino experiment. And then in the middle of the Tevatron, is an accelerator that goes by the name of Project X. This will be the world's highest power proton accelerator on the planet, bar none. No other accelerator will be even close. And this is the sort of investment we want to make at Fermilab that you can think of as the investment that was made in the early 80s with building the Tevatron. So with this accelerator built in the early 2020s, there's a physics program that will follow that, and this machine will be able to power that program for at least 3 decades. So this is very important to the lab's long-term future beyond the next decade, and we're working very hard to carry out the R&D to secure that project. Let me say a few words about Fermilab and the environment. Fermilab is a national environmental research park. We have more than 1,100 acres of restored prairie, wetlands, and woodland. We're a migration station for birds and insects. We're overrun with geese at the moment, as everyone else is, I'm sure. And it's a recreational area for our neighbors that many, many of our neighbors take advantage of. In the community, we have very active programs in education and outreach. We have the Letterman Science Center, which is a wonderful place for students to come and learn about science. And we really spend a lot of effort trying to talk to students, talk to the public about basic science, fundamental science, and the sort of science that we do at Fermilab. Should also say we are trying to strengthen and foster and nurture our connections with the larger community through our community advisory board, which has been very helpful for Fermilab. So let me just say, come visit Fermilab. The site is open every day. We have science tours. We have nature tours. science education programs. The Letterman Center is open. We have a wonderful arts and lecture series and a number of recreational activities. And thank you again for the opportunity to come tell you about Fermilab, and I'd be happy to take some questions.
Thank you very much. So that I don't insult you, is it Dr. Henderson?
Yes.
Fantastic. Forgive me for not...
Stuart works.
Doctor it is. So I was going to ask you, what the heck do you do as an associate director of accelerators? But now I know. So.
Yes.
Wow. I have one question. When you turned off the Tevatron, the tunnels, are they still used for other experimental purposes?
No, the tunnel is was put in a state in which we could store it for long term. So the magnets are still down there. The tunnel ordinarily contains magnets that are cooled to just a few degrees above absolute zero. Well, the magnets have been warmed up to room temperature and placed in a safe state. So the tunnel is just sitting there. We don't have funding to decommission the tunnel, which would involve emptying the tunnel of all the hardware. So that's not on our plate at the moment. And in fact, there are some experiments that have been proposed that would reuse not the entire tunnel, but certainly portions of the tunnel, in fact, in transporting beams around part of the site to other detector locations. So and it's quite an asset that we want to hang on.
I bet. And a quick query to our colleague, Alderman Brown. Were you in Chile recently because of this?
I was on vacation, but at the same time, my colleagues from Fermilab were at the mountaintop installing that incredible 570 megapixel detector. And they were worried about the altitude. I was down at sea level.
See, the alderman tried to call into the meeting, but we couldn't hear anything but waves crashing.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Wow. As far as recreational activities, I should probably add that some people don't realize there's a dog run at Fermilab. And if you trust your dog and like your dog to run free on the open prairie, Fermilab has a beautiful dog run that many people use as one of our many recreational possibilities.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you. Your facility is absolutely intriguing. I've been there a number of times. In fact, I've had lunch with Alderman Brown in your nice cafeteria. What interests me is the invited scientists that come to your facility from around the world. Are they here as guests of the Department of Energy? Is there a fee involved? Is there a charge of any sort?
No, there's no fee. There's no charge. In fact, the Department of Energy operates its user facilities, of which Fermilab is one, in a no-fee, no-charge mode, both for U.S. scientists as well as foreign scientists. The foreign scientists who come typically are members of a very large collaboration, a team of scientists in most of these examples I showed, from around the world who come together to carry out certain experiments.
So then there's a reciprocity for our scientists who go off to these other, to Switzerland and engage in
that's correct. So the Department of Energy funds quite a few physicists who carry out their research at CERN, for instance, and that's a reciprocal arrangement. Not completely reciprocal. There's certain... CERN has a different way of operating their labs than we do, for instance, but there's not a user fee per se.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
These visitors from other countries, of course, bring their own money. They live on the economy. They rent apartments. They rent cars. They eat food. They're supported by their own governments, typically. Many of them are postdoctoral researchers or graduate students.
Many of
a large
them actually,
amount of money flows into this area through these visiting scientists.
And although we call them visitors, many live here, so their experiment is at Fermilab, and they'll come here and live in the area for, 2 or 3 years while they're carrying out their research.
Yeah, I'm aware that there are a number of them that have remained here for year upon year after year.
Some
and
they stay.
Just
That's
rent
right.
or buy a home.
That's right.
In the area.
The IARC project, I think, is exciting, and I think it's really a step forward where the lab is finding opportunities to work with the private sector, and the facility that's been built, I think, is going to be a tremendous resource, and it'll be interesting to see how that all progresses, and at least from what you've said and from what I've heard, the early response has been very good.
Response has been very good. I view that course, I'm the associate director of Accelerator, so that's something very near and dear to my heart. It's a real opportunity for Fermilab, and it's an opportunity to really grow a program in applied technology in a way that the lab has never really done before, or really had a focus on that sort of activity before. So it also comes along at just the right time, because this is an issue that becomes increasingly important within the Department of Energy. So there's quite a bit of emphasis now on, even for fundamental science like particle physics, to look for ways to transfer technology and to engage industry. And that, in fact, starts with the president and goes through the Secretary of Energy and flows down to the program offices that manage Fermilab. So it's a really important topic, and we're really in the right place at the right time on it.
You might comment also on the fact that the current director has announced his retirement next spring, and maybe you might talk a little bit about how this will all progress. And
sure, I'd be happy to. Yes, Pierre Adone, director of Fermilab, announced his retirement, so he's stepping down to retire this summer. So on time scale of July or so, we certainly hope to have a new director in place. A search committee has been formed. Fermilab is operated by FRA, Fermi Research Alliance, which is a organization, a partnership between University of Chicago and Universities Research Association. So they're the contractor manager for the laboratory. They have assembled a search committee, chair of whom is an absolutely stellar individual, Norm Augustine. Some of you may remember was chairman and CEO of Lockheed Martin, has a tremendous standing within the not only the Department of Energy itself, but within Washington, D.C. politics and government. Has played critical roles over the last few years. There was a report that he chaired called Rising Above the Gathering Storm that laid out issues in our education and training for STEM, for science, technology, engineering, and math, and issues of American competitiveness and competitiveness relative to the rest of the world in STEM education and activity. So to have someone like that chairing the search committee gives a high degree of confidence that we will land a very good next laboratory director at Fermilab.
I may have missed it, but is IARC located on the Fermi campus?
Yeah, I should have pointed that out. The Illinois Accelerator Research Center, if you look at the bottom left corner, that's the so-called CDF building. If you've ever driven in from the Batavia Road side, you drive by that orange building. So it's a little hard to see in the artist rendering, but this new construction wraps around that orange building, and you can see the end of the new construction wrapping around in the bottom left corner. So that's right there in the middle of the Fermilab site.
And do our friends at like Stanford, they have a similar component to this, or is Fermi the first national lab to?
Fermilab is actually the first. So when I said we're in the right place at the right time, we actually, you know, rode the crest of that wave on this applied accelerator technology before any of the other labs, and working with the state of Illinois, you know, they were very supportive through Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity in helping fund this building and make it a reality.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Why is the shape of the building the shape it's in?
This new building?
No, the one that's there, Andre. Why is it like that?
Ask Stuart. I'm not sure.
Which one? The orange one?
The one you see from the road. Every time I drive by, I think, what the hell is Chuck Brown doing? Mm-hmm. And yeah, why is that shape like that? I think I know, but
like an A-frame.
Is there a reason behind it?
Robert Wilson was just an amazing, you know, he was a Renaissance man. He did everything.
He designed it too?
Designed it. Why did
he
and many of the structures at the laboratory. So he not only was a physicist, but you drive around the lab and you see sculptures. You see various pieces of art. You walk in the building, you see sculptures and artwork. Yeah, he He left his thumbprint on on most of Fermilab's architecture, in fact.
The anecdote is that Bob Wilson at one point was heard to say that he believed that accelerator builders were the cathedral builders of the 20th century. Decide for yourself whether that had anything to do with his design.
Yeah, right.
And humility is good. Anything else for the good doctor?
Thank you.
That's fascinating. Thank you very, very
thank
much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Andre, any closing remarks?
Oh, thank you for having us, and thanks.
Does everyone recognize Andre Salas, the former great Daily Herald reporter? Clearly wasn't that good. Now you're not working at Fermilab. What the heck, man? It's like, so how's life at Fermi? Good?
It's terrific.
Good.
It's
communications.
Thanks very much. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, man. Welcome. Great work. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Can we rent out that empty Tevatron for, like, fundraisers and stuff?
Perhaps.
Perhaps, okay. Wouldn't that be fun? Halloween. Paintball?
Actually, it's taking us down in there. That's interesting.
I got to be fascinated.
That's it. Shut it down.
That's fascinating. Do you guys have a good relationship with your friends at Slack?
Yes, actually.
Good.
Yeah. Good. A lot of friends at Slack.
I bet. Thank you again.
Gotcha.
Mr. Radovich was just asking me, what is Fermilab? I said,
just moved in.
Just moved in. Just built it. No permits or anything. Amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments this evening? Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine by this city council and can be enacted on, voted upon, and approved of one motion.
So moved.
Second.
Alderman Marks makes the motion. Alderman Singer makes the second. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Ralph D'Antino.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Item 10, municipal bills for payment. Actually, number 9A, forgive me. Committee of the whole, recommend acceptance of fiscal year 2012-13 second quarter goals report.
So moved.
Second.
Alderman Kilberg makes the motion. Alderman Vogelsberg makes the second. Any questions or comments? Voice vote is sufficient. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Let the record show there are 9 aye votes and one absent. Item 10, municipal bills for payment. We kindly ask our clerk to read the bills to be paid. Apparently, this is for a down payment on the new Fermi project. So.
Bills for payment total $3,754,363.67.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read. The individual invoices can be found on the city website in tonight's packet.
Second.
Alderman Brown makes a motion to pay the bills as presented and as can be found on the city's website and in tonight's packet, seconded by Alderman Hill. Any questions? Any comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Ralph D'Antino.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
According to my records, folks, we jump down to our closed session, but first we'd like to offer any new business from anyone from the audience this evening or from the dais? Alderman Singer?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mary, I don't know if it's appropriate to bring this subject forward at this point in time, but receiving an email from you regarding the DOA actuary charges? Yes, that's going to affect our budget, is it not?
It's not, because we have our own actuarial figures that we use. My point in sending that to you is just to let you know that there's pending legislation regarding more stringent requirements and use of Department of Insurance actuarial figures.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're not required to do that. We have the choice of hiring our own actuary, which the fire and police pension boards both do. However, there is talk that
bless you.
Have to
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you for that explanation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Well, you're welcome. Anyone else? Dick, you feeling okay? Doing good. No other new business? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn to closed session.
So moved.
Second.
For the discussion of purchase of or sale of real property for the use of the public body. There's a motion by Alderman Marks, seconded by Alderman Singer. A roll call vote is in order. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Dean Kilberg?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
John Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Don Cummings?
Aye.
Motion passes. There is no action being taken this evening. We don't expect to be more than 4 or 5 hours, Chuck.
Yeah.
It should be brief. Microphones are off.